When you come in on Monday and you're not feeling real well, does anyone ever say to you, sounds like someone has a case of the Mondays?
No. No, man. No, man. I believe you get your ass kicked saying something like that, man.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom O. We have Greg Pappas on the board. Matt Byrne will be here in a minute, allegedly. We have the S&P futures up 25. And we have the NASDAQ futures up 120. So we're pushing ahead. We came flying back up Friday. At the end of the day, we had a still a crummy month, but still, last day of the month, the market was up over 1% across the board. This is after the big blow up in the Oval Office. So we were down, and we came back flying up. So that's where that is. So today we have Bitcoin.
Bitcoin's
up flying, yeah, because over the weekend,
the Coinbase calls that you have too, suddenly back in the money.
Well, I knew a bunch of people last week who lost a lot of money in there, so maybe they'll be getting it back today. Would that be nice for them?
Yeah, it opened up like up 5. No, that was MSTR. But Coinbase up like 10% too.
It's, it's interesting world we're in right now. What is going on in the
this week we
commodity
got
space?
We've got. Oh, I was gonna say Target is this week. That should be interesting.
Also got labor numbers this week. And now none of the stuff that's happened the last couple
but
weeks.
But Target can't lie, or it's against the law to lie.
What law? We have laws now?
Well, I mean, you got, I think, Target, Nordstrom, Ross, like a bunch of retailers this week. We can see kind of how they're doing. Foot Locker? Yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting to see a lot of the retail stocks have really blown through their straddles.
Victoria's Secret. I think that's, Wednesday?
Yeah, what do you make of that? Why all of a sudden is the market having a little less... A little less able to price these moves?
Probably because the indexes are so... Are you talking about the individual? Or
individual ones. Individual ones.
Yeah, we're at like 18 or 19 in the VIX. So that's a question. There's questions. So I want to say that as you get closer to 20, 25, you know, that's anything starts to go.
Now I'm talking about individual stocks where on earnings days the market,
the VIX is
I'm talking about the VIX. I'm talking about a straddle being $10 and a stock moving 30.
Yeah, in general, I think the VIX is kind of lower because the larger companies have are more priced in. But the smaller companies are kind of up for grabs, so I would say that
I'd be kind of careful about even nudging the VIX toward an individual stock and how the straddle. One of those has nothing to do with the other.
Well,
I mean,
the VIX is just
the index of
the wings of the S&P 500 stocks. So it'll be mostly the same weight. as the in, as the S&P 500, but I would say the VIX is actually a little muted because the Apples of the world are actually better priced right now than the, or at least easier to trade than the smaller stocks.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, if you're from the school of University of Chicago, or where I'm from, it's supposed to be the market is all-knowing.
Yeah, that hasn't worked out so well over the past, I don't know, since long-term capital.
Well, Russell thinks it has a lot to do with the companies not being able to give out information, or with the regulation FD, they're actually paying attention to it. And maybe some of it has to do with you don't have a whole lot of... I mean, what's the point if everybody's going to be doing, well, trades for free and selling them on the other end? What do you need an analyst for? You know, he pays attention to it anyway. Or if they do, they're going to...
I think we're all equally clueless, besides maybe Steve Cohen, who's been in trouble for insider trading a whole bunch.
Speaking of insider trading, I think anybody knew about the Fed announcement on Bitcoin?
I would say a select few definitely did.
Well, that's today's world, I guess. I had a interesting conversation on with some of the group that I'm not gonna say. Greg, I'm gonna say it's not, I'm not gonna say brainwashed. I'm gonna say a different way of thinking. Friday night, I was having a conversation with somebody regarding going to a Sox game this year, right? And I said something to the effect, "Well, man, I don't feel like going. I'm out. You guys go." And or a Cub game, and I said, you know, I had season tickets, and I had my seats, and all of a sudden the team got so horrible, I couldn't give them away, and that's why I bought them for clients and stuff, and I couldn't give them away, so I dumped my season tickets, and I said a lot of other people have too. Plus, I like the idea of having a ticket, so if I had a client, I could just give them the tickets, and I go through the whole routine. And basically, the argument that I started, what are you talking about? What's the matter with you? That's the new world. And I said, I get that part. I hope I'm not that dumb. Don't you understand? There's something in economics called dollar votes. And he goes, what are those? I said, well, whenever you buy something, whenever you go to this restaurant, that restaurant, you buy this car, buy another car, or don't buy a car, whatever. Essentially, you're spending money in a competitive society. Wherever you spend money, you're essentially approving that. Whoever that person is that's selling it to you or for that service, you're essentially, it's almost like a vote. You're sending your dollars to the place you think is the best value, or not. and that's
where you're currently sending dollar votes.
Well, I'm saying or not, or you don't. He says, well, that's crazy. I said, if this is the way, you know, they're going to do business today, you have to do it that way. I said, no, I don't. People are getting so much, and this I think is one of the things I argue with Hal a lot, is nothing around you, very little around you is competitive right now. So yes, you have to send your dollar votes to Commonwealth Edison if you want to have electricity, duh. But, and it's getting more and more like that. But so I explained to him, I have a friend.
Cartels?
Yeah, well, I said a friend who had White Sox season tickets for literally 35 years. And that's all he does is give them to clients. And then it got to the point where they said, we're not going to have
any. They're so bad.
Well, whatever. But people, you know.
We don't want to be associated.
No, they said, we don't have tickets anymore. And for 2 or 3 years, he paid like $500 to the Sox to print him tickets. So finally they said, okay, we're not going to do that anymore. Is he, even if I pay you? No. So for the first year he tried doing it, every person, now maybe he's just giving them to old people, I don't know what he's doing. He said, every night I gave them to somebody, they're calling me from the gate, they can't get in, how do they download this? He goes, I want to know part of it.
Right.
I just want to know part of it.
Yeah, it's too complicated.
So this guy says to me, well, he just has to educate those people. I said, my point is, no, he doesn't.
Yeah,
he can just say no.
Right. Yeah, I've had problems, and I'm, you know, somewhat tech savvy, and it's like shooting yourself in the foot, but whatever, they'll figure it out.
Well, or not, or nobody's there, which is
right.
Nobody's there.
They did the dollar hot dog days.
Yeah,
that was enough.
Well, okay. My buddy, one of my lawyer buddies, he and his wife went, and somebody you know, gave him the thing on a phone, and his wife's reasonably savvy. They pay $30 to park, and they can't get in. And so he says to the guy,
"We're just leaving."
He says, "Guess what happened? He's in line." And the guy says, "Is there anybody that can help, like over at the ticket booth or something?" The guy kept picking young kids out of line and said he must know how to do it. He's young.
Yeah.
Except for the third young kid, they go, "I think we're leaving."
Have you seen the speculation online that Ishbia is going to try to buy the White Sox? Interesting.
Well,
they're saying,
I have a feeling they're for sale.
They're saying, well, if he's got $80 million to build a house in Winnetka, he's definitely got the money to buy the White Sox.
There's a lot of people involved in the White Sox.
Yeah.
I think, aren't the Crowns involved? In the
they showed, like, the the max contract of the White Sox ever. And it was, like, right around that $80 million or something. And they said, well, this guy's got it.
What'd they pay for Rent last year?
I think Benintendi was 77.
It was he's hurt for 6 weeks.
Whoops.
Got whacked by a pitch on his hand and broke his hand or something.
There wasn't surgery, though, was it?
No, but still, yeah. It's 4 to 6
weeks.
Yeah,
you got to rest it.
If you got one thing about Major League Baseball, if you got a bum hand, you're not hitting.
Could you imagine how that feels if you got a hold of the ball and you had a broken hand, too? That got to hurt so bad.
Oh, yeah, it's got to hurt. Oh, yeah, would they pay $1.5 million in rent last year? That's not bad. I got the best deal in all sports, I think. And everybody thinks they need a new stadium.
Well.
Crazy world.
The Arlington Heights deal is starting to get some buzz, too. I guess they're re-going through where the developments are going to be and how the stadium's going to be positioned.
Oh, well, let them go.
Yeah.
Why don't we say
that would be a step forward.
Well, just offer the current lease, maybe a little more money in Soldier Field to Jacksonville or somebody. They'd be there in a second. Blue smoke would be coming out of their ass getting up there. I mean,
he's not from here, but he went to Illinois.
Illinois basketball team all of a sudden resurrected yesterday. Clobbered Michigan. Hey, Joel's not going to be happy.
Yeah, they are. The Yakachonis is the guy. He's you know, Mr. March Madness.
Well, NCAA should be interesting. I watched the Irish girls on Saturday, and they won, so they're tied for the ACC championship. But I've never seen the women's game with as many teams with a chance to win as now. I mean, for years it was, you know, Connecticut, Tennessee. Who else? A couple more, and then maybe the Irish on a great year. But now it's there's at least 10 teams I think that could win. You know, given the things falling right for them, which, you know, makes for a great game. I mean, the guys are really. What is there a big favorite in the guys? Maybe Auburn
in
basketball.
They're
not a big favorite.
They're looking for Duke this year.
Duke?
Yeah.
I thought Auburn was one for most of the year. But
yeah.
And but it's not like those guys can't get beat along the way. I mean, it's not like UCLA days.
No. I would imagine that as they go through the conference tournaments, Selection Sunday is what, the 16th?
Yeah, the tournaments are all this week, and then the women are next week, I think.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see who gets those number one seeds.
Well, we'll have to see if people work their way through these conference tournaments or they bow out early. I mean, it used to be the good teams didn't mind if they lost in the second round. They're going to be in anyway with a high pick. But now I think if you do that, you might blow your seed.
Yeah, I would look for probably Duke, Auburn, Houston, and Alabama to be the number one seeds, but if the Gators or if like St. John's, you know, just sweeps their tournaments, then maybe they sneak into one of those spots. I don't think Alabama's a lock.
Where do you think anybody from the Big East, UConn's no good this year?
Well, St. John's is probably the best out of the Big East.
Hey, DePaul is
DePaul was 2-16.
Not DePaul, I'm sorry, Marquette.
Marquette?
Yeah.
They're in terms of odds, they're the same as Illinois. So they're maybe, you know, top 20.
Yeah, they're a team nobody really wants to play.
I wouldn't. Yeah.
It's
same thing with Creedon.
So what's going to happen to your buddy Pete Rose now that he's been pardoned, even though he was never accused?
What is that like, distract, or
I don't know what that is.
Is that just a distraction, or maybe he just liked Pete Rose?
I think it's just whatever he thinks about his opinion wants to answer.
I don't think so. I think that's probably like a strategic distraction or something.
Well, whatever.
You just, when everybody's trying to focus on something else, you throw something in like that. And
the rumor has it, this is the stuff from like the Quora guys, it's not just the betting on the game, it's the kind of lifetime after. I mean, some people are accusing him of who knows. You know, that's why you get pardoned, I guess.
I mean, personally, if I was betting on my team, I would just, you know, take that money and pay it to the other team to lose. But it's like, if you're betting on the games, you're betting on the games. I think that's what, like, baseball really, it didn't matter.
But this is what's, I don't know, maybe it's an old guy, young guy thing or something, but as Steve Stone once said, that, or I'm sure he would say it again today, he said every locker room he ever walked into, there was a sign on there, we were reminding people you cannot gamble.
Yeah.
It's not like it's right in front of your face. It's not up to, you know, you or me 30 years later to say, yeah, but man, if he just would have...
Personally, that just makes me wonder if MJ ever did it, well, at least on the books.
So, well, there are people who think it was where he retired for 2 years.
Yeah, he was like Mr. Pressure, Mr. Gambling, Mr. whatever on the golf course, on the I just can't imagine him not gambling on himself, but whatever.
But how many people today would say, well, man, if he didn't bet against his own team, what's the problem? Well, it's not up to you to recreate the morality or the rules of other people.
If I was Pete Rose or MJ or someone like, you know, All-Star, you can do a lot. You get a lot of people, a lot of sway.
Well, the accusation, since he was out of baseball, is that he used to sell autographs. Was at Caesar's Palace in the morning and I go down to gamble in the afternoon or something?
Nice.
Was it Caesar's? I think it might have been. I'm not positive. But he had sold his, like, 200-hit bat, like, 8 times or something. You know, that type of thing.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not just the betting.
It was the Field of Dreams memorabilia store.
Yeah.
So that was in the Caesar's complex.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. Plus, it really doesn't. I don't think it matters all that much. I mean,
they paid him for 5 years. Wow.
I don't. My concern about it is at a baseball level, the guy surely belongs in there. But a lot of that was also longevity. I mean, but he was an All-Star at what, 4 different positions. I mean, you know, you can't bitch about the guy's career. But the idea, like with the steroid guys, you know, they're not in there.
Right.
You know, Tony La Russa obviously knew what was going on. He's in there. And you can't be, what was the guy in Boardwalk Empire? You can't be half a gangster. I mean, Tony La Russa was renowned as the guy that if somebody had 2 different colored shoelaces, he knew about it before the guy got away from the locker room, right?
Yikes.
Yeah, so you also can't say guys are shooting each other in the behind in the locker room and you're not supposed to, he doesn't know about that.
And maybe the shoelaces now, people get in trouble about that. The wrong color, the wrong logo, the wrong.
But how did he know? What was the first baseman's name? The Hell Hormones? How could you not tell that guy was on rights? All of a sudden, his neck gets as big as the moon. He gets zits all over him, and it, duh.
He looked like a brick bleep house.
Yeah. Did you ever see the
fun to watch?
Did you ever see the picture of a home run derby in Milwaukee when Sammy Sosa and those guys were all. Who were the guys who were going for it? That him and who was the first baseman in St. Louis?
Was Bagwell?
No, the
Pujols.
No, the guy who was all the other roid monster that was with it was Sammy Sosa that 1 year.
Sammy Sosa and are you talking about 98?
Yeah. Anyway, there's this picture Sosa taking batting practice in a T-shirt and he's leaning on the bat. You look at his biceps and I go, my God. There isn't a guy who's in Mr. Universe that wouldn't want that kind of muscle delineation. And the 1 year he came up here, and the guy from the Cubs uniform was Yash.
Yeah, I don't know. It looks like I
can't believe how many sizes he went up in one off season.
Looks like Griffey won in '98.
No, you know the guy I'm talking about, the big lefty first baseman, and he was one of the. It was him and he was on Oakland. They were on Oakland together, and then he went to St. Louis.
Then he went to
St. Louis. The two Bruce brothers, him and the Reutzer wrote the book on it. That was his name.
Canseco?
Yeah, it was Canseco, and who was the other guy?
Huh, I'm sure someone will tell you.
Yeah, somebody will.
Yeah.
Mark McGuire.
McGuire.
He got huge.
Yeah.
But he had power anyway. I watched him in spring training. Somebody had this bus parked out near right field. The guy launches one. He cleared the park. He cleared the bus. The thing just was, and he had super power. Well, so did Sosa even before he got on the roids, but still, it doesn't make you hit the ball. Anywho, so what do you? You said you were doing a. What are tariffs? What should I do if we have a client calls up and wants to buy or sell beans or corn? What should I say about tariffs?
I would be, like you said, with the volatility, you pick about how far you think it's going to move, and then maybe grab some upside calls if it's dipping that day, or if you can sell some premium. I mean, that's lots of opportunity. I think this is the past maybe 6-8 months for trading. It's been some of the best trading, whether it be in equities like Nvidia or all the premium associated with the Magnificent Seven, or if it's in the commodity space, the oil trades and natural gas and heating oil. Those have been moving, you know, daily. I can't imagine a better trading.
Well, why do you think that the guys that
there's enough of uncertainty to where even the hedgers, rather than the hedgers, are kind of unsure. So they're just responding just like us. So it's more level, and obviously when there's that scenario, it's going to be more volatile.
You and I, we hang with some people that are in all the different firms, some of the ones that provide orders to the floor and make markets in a lot of places. Why do you suppose almost across the board, after having a pretty good November, December, they all had a horrendous February?
Reversion to the mean. Not everything works all the time, and they probably, I mean, we all get caught on stuff. But what happens is those expectations change. So at the end of last year, everybody was wrapping up, and now we're kind of changing again, and Trump has been even more, vocal about the tariffs and about what's going to happen and what he wants to happen, and then certain things don't happen, so he threatens to call it double down on or take away aid from Ukraine or whatever. The expectations have been getting more crazy, or not crazy, but they're more uncertain, so the volatility goes higher, and there's just more opportunity. I would say if you're looking to say trade a stock between $100 and $110, maybe now it's 95 to 115. You know, you just need that little bit of extra space.
If you had to, we're going to break here in a second, but if you had a character, I mean, if, you know, I happen to think that everything the guy says is...
Or you could just decrease your size. I mean, if you think the market's going to be 20% more volatile, maybe you decrease your size 20%.
You definitely got to decrease the size, but you wonder if there are markets, and of course you can't characterize, it's like technical analysis, Greg, you can't... It happens, but you can't really tell when you're in it, what you're in, you know, whether you're in a double top, a double bottom. A couple of months later, it becomes obvious where you were, right? But what do you make of, it's kind of, for trading, it comes and it goes. I'll say there's two kinds of markets for trading. There's kind of momentum markets, and then there's, I'll say, fading markets. And I've been in both, and a lot of times your foreign exchange, your currencies and stuff, and then your grains even, become trending markets. Or once they start to go up or down, they do it for a while. And if a stock is up at 12 o'clock, you're probably more likely to want to buy it than sell it, right?
I think the people who really do well are the people who can understand kind of what the other side is doing.
You know, the other side is this electronic world.
Exactly. So if you're a trader and you're looking to be more flat than not, you kind of need to understand how your counterparty or the investor or the long-term person is kind of thinking. And if you're a investor, if you understand kind of how the trader, the person who wants to be more flat at the end of the day, are thinking, then you can really, I don't want to say time, but you can better understand how things are unfolding in real time. Just knowing that it's going to, if things get more scary, sometimes that liquidity just isn't there, and so it's not worth paying up or selling down. And so that would be an investor kind of understanding that right now that it's a trader's market, and yeah, you would really need to widen out your market or let them come to you rather than going to them, because that's just, if you want to get somewhat of good deals, you have to understand how kind of the other side works. So that
well,
would
the,
be
so there have been times when if it's noon and you told somebody IBM's up $2, there's people can't wait to run to the telephone, show my age, and sell it. And there's other times when it's up $2,
one
people
of the
can't
huge
wait, they always want to buy it.
Yeah, one of the huge strategies is just buying on the close, and that has done, you know, considerably better than almost any of the other.
Well, that's because all your mutual fund buying is always done on the close. You're trying to get it in front of, that's one of
the mutual fund, and with the market going up with the overnight session and the other places, really just putting in buy orders to the U.S. markets has really been a thing over the past, I don't know, 15 years.
I'm reading some of these emails from my people.
Going back to the...
Yeah.
The
well, what do you say we go to break and then bring John on? SP Views up 29, NASDAQ Views up 150. Pretty good rally. A pretty good rally on Friday after a pretty lousy February. Maybe March will be better. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I am also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas in studio. Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures up 29. NASDAQ Futures up 148. Looks like we're up kind of across the board here, which is nice for those that have been getting clobbered last month. Over in Europe, the defense stocks, boy, oh boy, we should have bought some. Why didn't we buy European defense stocks about 3 weeks ago, for God's sake? BAE Systems up 13%. They're like their
Rolls-Royce.
BAE is the biggest, isn't it?
I don't know. I usually watch Rolls.
Yeah. What are they?
They're up like 25%.
Oh, God. Well, DAX up 610. Ouch. If you're short, pretty good if you're long. 2.7%. CAC around up 129, 1.6. FTSE up 73, that's 0.8. So those guys are up pretty good. Over in Asia, we've got... What did I do here? I'm always hitting the wrong button, Greg. That's just what I do. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 629, 1.7%. Hang Seng up 64, 0.3%. Shanghai down 4. Call that flat. So not much going on in mainland China. Friday, Dow was up 601, S&P up 92, NASDAQ up 302. Bonds up 2 basis points, 4.25. The Bund up 11 basis points, 2.50. That's a big move. That's a really big move. Japan up 3 basis points, 1.41. Oil, you would think it would be flying up, but it's not. 69.89, up 13 cents still. What are they? We're down 69 to 73 now is our range. Brent up 22 cents, 73.03. Natural gas up 2 cents. 386, RBOB unchanged, 222. Gold, up 37 bucks, but still under 2,900. It got clobbered last week. 2,986, but pretty big bounce there. Silver up 66 cents, 32.16. Copper up 5 cents, 4.59. Copper's been a pretty steady performer over the last couple years. Slow, but keeps creeping. Foreign exchange, U.S. dollar against the euro, 104.6, kind of where it was. British pound, 126.8. So, again, not much movement there. Crypto, here's the number, though. Why do I have Bitcoin down 1,200? Were they down? They were up 7,000 yesterday?
They were up close to 9,000, weren't they?
I got them down 1,200. Why is it? Well, it's up 14,000 in 3 days. So
not bad.
So, yeah, it's...
Down a whole bunch. So, you know, we were at 100 or 103 and then down to 82.
But I thought I had it at 97 last night. You know, it's 92.
I mean, that wouldn't surprise me.
No.
I've been watching Coinbase, and Coinbase was up, or what's it called? MicroStrategy was up 15%, and now it's 10.
Why don't you check, we're doing traffic, weather, sports, if we had a turnaround here this morning, because I could have sworn I looked this morning, it was up 7,000. Anyway, how do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Yeah, good morning. It's currently 6:41 a.m. on March 3rd, 2025. As far as weather in Chicago, 34 degrees at Midway and 33 at O'Hare. High of around 50 today with a slight chance of rain and sleet. Tonight, mostly cloudy and likely chance of showers, about 60%, and a low of 40 degrees. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 53 degrees right now. Expected to be sunny, windier, and cooler with a high of 66 degrees today and partly sunny skies. In the MLB yesterday, spring training for the Cubs, they lost to the Cincinnati Reds 7-3. Meanwhile, the Sox lost to Dodgers 6-3. Let's go down to college basketball for men's. Wisconsin lost to Michigan State. That was 71-62. Illinois beat Michigan 93-73. And Memphis won against UAB. Close game of 88-81. In women's, Notre Dame won against Louisville 72-59, and Marquette lost to UConn 92-57. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Yeah, we have Mr. Flanagan.
We do indeed.
Hey, Jan, how are you?
Good. How about you?
Doing all right. I had some, we talk about, some people told me this week about how they, the first quarter, for those who are not on Medicare, so a lot of my friends are, obviously, and they, Medicare drug stuff, one of the reasons I think the first quarter is a little shabby for older people is you have to pay your deductible on your drugs the first quarter, right? First month?
Yeah.
So it's $590 out of everybody's pocket. That's a number.
Yep. Just went to the pharmacy the other day.
Yeah, it's always a fun trip, isn't it?
Yeah.
So one of the people was telling me about they're on this Eliquis. And for Eliquis, for those who don't know, it's one of the, well, I'd say one of the
$1,000 a month?
It's $1,000 a month. Actually, the list price is down to $790 or $690 or something. You know what it costs to make Eliquis?
To make it?
Yeah.
I don't know. What? Like
$18 a year, and it's $690 a month for people.
Yikes.
Needless markup.
And then I was reading about the rest goes into research and blah, 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 and I'm going, why do people believe this crap? Isn't that pretty amazing?
That's BMY or Pfizer. I think maybe both of them do.
No, it's Bristol Myers. Pfizer, I think, does the other one. It's Eliquis, and what's the other? Xarelto is a competitor.
It's apixaban.
Yeah, it's the fix from the. Warfarin, the rat poison. The warfarin, you had to go for a test every week or month or something to make sure you weren't taking too much or too little. Or this stuff, you don't. But the difference is, what, $10 a month versus $680? And in every other country in the world, it's like $100 a month.
Yikes.
Did you see that the government spending stuff, Jen, are now going to take it out of GDP as of this morning? Not going to be reported?
No, I didn't.
It's not going to be reported as part of GDP. Well, you don't want people to see what you're doing. You just don't do it, right?
Yeah. That's what these numbers are for.
Yeah, that's what these numbers are for. I just wonder what the state of the medical community is. I mean, when you start talking about it, I think these drugs have been around for like 15 years. I mean, what do you think? In order to fix this, Janice, and we're trying to fix everything, I guess. What are we gonna do? We have to get rid of patents, or how do you break this down? How do you say we're not gonna have people spending $690 a month for something that costs somebody $1.50? Where do you even start? Or should you? Maybe open up. I mean, we have people on the show. I mean, Hal being the most vocal that loves things being competitive, but none of the stuff's competitive. That I can see. I mean, bars are, I guess. Restaurants are. Maybe your barber is. Corn certainly is. Soybeans are. You think they still are? I actually think oil's pretty competitive. After you get past there, name me one.
I don't think there's going to be much change, Tom, until there's a change in the culture of medical practice. I mean, what we're moving to now, you know, with televisits where you don't even see a doctor. And you know, most of the time you never talk to a doctor, even when you're trying to talk to a doctor. But the culture has become one of, you know, symptom treating, and it's not about engaging disease, or you know, telling people the tough things they have to do if they don't want to be sick. But if you can alleviate symptoms, and you've gotten really good at that, and it's a very expensive luxury. But that whole culture has made all this possible. So once drugs become essentials, then of course the pricing just goes out. The pricing intelligence goes right out the window. You can charge people whatever they want because they have to have this stuff. It's like an addiction. So I don't think you can have one without the other. It's got to be, you know,
the patents last for 20 years, right?
17, but if you somehow or another you can weasel yourself 2 years more. Both Viagra and Cialis managed to get 19. And as soon as they ran off Patton, they ran off CNBC and they ran off the NFL. They were gone. What was the first year they were off? What was it, $40 million to the NFL? Yeah, it was some huge number.
Yeah. And once those patents run out, they'll just, you know, put some other additive into it and, you know, rebrand it and get another patent out. So,
well, somebody will, like, well, somebody will also be the generic.
You would hope that it would be generic, yeah.
Then they'll buy the generic. Or the generic will be overseas and won't be near as good. I know some people who have medications and, you know, God knows what, thyroids or whatever, that the generic are nowhere near as good. I mean, they're not always as good.
No, they're not substitutable, though.
Man, I don't know why is that? Is it not the same formula, or is it not the same? But, you know, here it's so crazy, you know, in this country. Like if you have a brokerage firm, I mean, I guess I don't know if there are any overseas, but there must be. But if you have a brokerage firm here, you're under intense scrutiny. If you're making drugs here, I have to believe it's sort of the same way. People are making sure that, you know, the place is clean and all that kind of stuff. Who gets to inspect a place in China? I mean, and yet we just assume it's any good. Maybe it's like the Wuhan labs, a little bit leaky.
A little bit. Leaky. Good choice of word, though.
Well, a little leaky. Was the what was the book? Who wrote it about the what's the disease where the blood comes out everything?
Ebola.
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 Now they had some nun who was down there working with a huge you know, spacesuit. And she had a huge itch in her eye, and she stuck her finger in there to itch her eye, and that's how it got out. It doesn't take much, does it? I mean, I'm not much of a disease guy, but it doesn't take much to get out. I mean, it's not like it couldn't have got out of the Wuhan plant without them wanting it to. I mean, it could sneak out, right? Sneak out.
Yeah.
Anyway, what do you? We seem to have, you know, the Atlanta Fed, and sometimes they're wrong, is talking about the first quarter GDP going to be down.
Negative, right? Negative 1.5.
Well, that's their prediction. If you go to the Atlanta Fed,
someone's going to get fired.
Well, you go to the Atlanta Fed, it changes. Go ahead over there, Greg. It changes like every couple of days, and then they'll tell you why it changed, right? But those every you see all these numbers that come out, and most of them, I'm going to say, are certainly not tradable, are they? They'll be Empire State number. Or they'll be, what's the one in the middle of the country? What's ours? There's all these. Every Fed does a survey. Every one of those things that come out, you know, be it the rail car loadings or something else loadings, these guys look at every one of those things and they adjust the GDP because of it. It's pretty fascinating. I haven't looked at it in a while, but it's, Greg, check out the Atlanta Fed, and it's but they'll tell you.
I'd rather watch paint dry.
Well, okay, but most of the time when you see stuff come from the government, they'll say we had the our GDP estimate was a positive one last week. And this week it's a negative 0.5, and you sit there and go, well, that's cool. But they'll actually say it's because these three indices came out, and that's why we made our adjustment. So it's actually somewhat educational to read the stuff. Now, whether they're right or not, it's another whole story. But John actually will tell you why they changed it, which I think is kind of illuminating, but that's just me. But they have this run. What are they? I'll dig it up here. It's Atlanta Fed. But they came out with the negative thing, and it was a big shock yesterday to everybody, or Friday. It's called the Atlanta Fed GDP Now. Is not an official forecast of the Atlanta Fed. Rather, it's best viewed as a running estimate of what the hell that means. The growth rate of the real gross domestic product is a key indicator of economic activity. The official estimate is released with a delay. Our GDP Now forecasting model provides a now cast. The official estimate prior to its release by the GDP growth, blah, blah, blah. So where are we here? Our latest estimate is minus 1.4% on February 28th, 2025. The GDP Now estimate in the first quarter is minus 1.5, down from 2.3% on February 19th. So it's gone from a 2.3% growth to minus 1.5%. After recent releases from the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis and Census Bureau, the nowcast of the contribution of net imports to the first quarter GDP has fallen from minus 0.41 to minus 3.70. So they're taking account of the tariffs, evidently. Well, nowcast the first quarter real personal consumption fell from 2.3% to 1.3%. So at least, John, they tell you why. Now, maybe you could disagree with why they did it, and your forecast will be different, right? But that's where that is. So that would be a shocker, wouldn't it? Minus 1.5.
When does that officially come out?
Well, the first quarters won't come out at least at the end of March, right?
The end of March?
Yeah.
So if you look at spider options for the end of March, we can see.
Well, how do you know that everybody doesn't already, it's not already in there?
Right. Yeah.
The, it's sort of interesting stuff. I'm always asking our sports guys, John, when you look forward, I mean, this is what you do in any walk of life, whether you're investing or not necessarily if you're investing today, you're buying the dip or doing some stuff, but if you're actually looking at a company and say, okay, how much are these guys going to make 3, 4, 5 years ago, without even knowing it, you have to have, how's that for a term? You should have some view of what the world's going to look like 5 years from now. If everybody's growing and things are kicking ass, all you really need is for your company to keep pace. But if you think your company is going to grow 10% a year, which is a lot, and you think the economy is going to be flat for 5 years, you better have some real idea of how the hell your company is going to grow 10 when nobody else is growing at all. Maybe they will. Maybe they have pricing power. Maybe they are in an area where you have to have. Maybe it is drugs. Maybe it's sports. Who knows? But you at least, it would be an interesting paper to hear somebody say, I like XYZ company. It's going to grow 10% a year while the economy is flat. I want to know what their formula is, wouldn't you, Jen?
Yeah. What insider information do they have?
But there will be companies that, even if the economy is flat, will grow 10%. There'll probably be companies that go down 20, right? So,
yeah.
So I mean, there's a... But what would you... Even if you're buying a... I was stunned 2 weeks ago, and I don't want to go through it again, the thing about these NBA teams and how much they're, quote, worth. And some of them, they got them worth $6 billion in the last year. They made, $100 million. Did a couple of them lose money, Greg? And a couple others were flat? I mean, if you had $5 billion dropping out of your pocket and sit there, I'll go buy something that made $100 million last year, your view of the next 5 years better be pretty good, right, Jen?
Yeah.
AI says the average team is worth $4.4 or $4.66 billion.
Well, we had the whole list from CNBC. Yeah, matter of fact, they have it here somewhere.
The Knicks are like $7.5 billion or something.
I think the number one was...
The Bulls were higher, too. They were like 5 or 6.
Everybody was sort of in the 5s, and then there was a couple that were... Who was the top one? It wasn't the Celtics. It was...
I think it's the Knicks.
I think it might, well, let me see if I can
Golden find State,
it.
Maybe?
No. Yeah, it was Golden State.
Yeah.
They were up there in the Knicks. There was like 2 or 3 in the 7s, and everybody else was kind of in the high 5s. But anyway, Sam, what is your
view? Well, the Knicks and the Lakers are up there. They got to be, right? There.
I was surprised. Golden State was they were like the top 3, but Golden State was, and everybody else kind of drops down. And there's a couple in the 4s, Timberwolves and places like that. But still, you wonder, are these, you would think that if that's what you're going to pay, that you're going to be making, $400 million, $350 million 5 years from now? Do you see that happening, Jen? Maybe.
People are paying up for the monopoly.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of psychic income that goes with that. You're in the club, and you're also people who can borrow money cheaper than other people.
Great marketing for your real business.
Yeah, it's a... I wonder what we're going to look like 5 years from now. This is not about politics. It's just about debt, interest rates. I mean, you're dragging people. If you start laying people off and they make up for it by, 25% credit card loans, John, you get out in a minute. I've gotten to the point now where I should wear blinders or something, but every place I go now, I feel like I'm on the show. Or I'm just, instead of like shopping, I'm observing the people around me.
Yeah.
How healthy do they look? What are they buying? How closely are they looking at the prices? Those kinds of things. And you ever hear of a place called, it wasn't TJ Maxx, it was Big Lots? You ever go to a Big Lots store? And there was a real, it was a big, big lots down in Portage where, you know, Audrey had her place down there and we have a bunch of friends. People go there and they buy all this stuff. They had furniture, they had everything. And in Indiana, there's a huge, I'll use the term, underclass economically that is just all over the place. You can't miss it. You know, you see people in the stores that are buying the good stuff and you see people that are checking the price every time they do everything. And they had a big lots down there, and you know, we'd stop in once in a while. I don't think I ever bought anything there, but God knows. Well, you know, I'd buy some of the dog stuff there. If you wanted a leash, they had a leash there cheaper, that kind of thing. Well, they go out of business, and I think there's a new place called like Ollie's or something. So yesterday, she didn't have an open house, so she goes, let's take a ride over to Ollie's, see what the place is like. It's a nice day, so off we go. I just look around, Jen, there isn't, it's in a suburb of Joliet, so it's kind of a poor area. Man, it doesn't look good. Nobody looks healthy. Nobody looks like they got any money. I mean, I don't think we're in that amazing a shape. You know, and it's, I went from there to listening to, this is about my day, my Stacks and Jacks Cub Reporter day. I start to look at kind of like a Winds of War thing for World War II. I started talking about the U.S., in the 20s, everybody was into consumption, big parties, and they show all these huge parties and people sucking on martinis and Manhattans and so forth. The absolute view of what the 1920s was supposed to mean for people, right? Then they say, okay, and all of a sudden we have this recession or depression, and they show everybody in a, you know, waiting in a line looking for soup, and all of a sudden like, and there's not a job anywhere. And which is true, but what do you, what would be your observations right out of the gate on that? What I just said.
About?
The 20s being the big, there's so much consumption, they're showing big huge cars and all that kind of stuff. And as time has gone by, and I read William Kennedy's Freedom from Fear, that was pretty much all BS in the 20s. There were more... the top 1% had more money of the population than even now. That only 7% of the people owned stock, and the entire agrarian group, which was over 50% of the country, the entire decade of the 20s was in at least a bad recession, maybe a depression already. And nobody ever talks about that group. They just talk about the people sucking up the big, you know, the big martinis in Chicago and New York. No, that was never the correct characterization of the 20s, was it, for everybody?
No. Well, you know, I've read about it and the, you know, the perception in hindsight and so on, but really I was very influenced by my parents' viewpoint and what they said about the 20s and what they said about the 30s and how the 20s, you know, looked to them after they lived through the 30s. And my dad especially, I've always carried this with me, that he hated any kind of nostalgia approach to the 20s. Like, that was such a happy time, you know, the arts, everything, the culture was so freewheeling, everybody was, you know, living well. He really would get furious when the discussion turned in that direction, because he had, I think, seen through it as a kid and didn't like it, and then grew to hate it by the time the Depression woke around. And in hindsight, it looked, you know, to him as if people had just, you know, thrown caution to the wind and living the high life. And the high life was a complete illusion for most people. And any attempt to soft pedal that or sugarcoat it really irritated him.
Well, the idea that, you know, even the shoeshine boy in the subway was one of the famous, J.P. Morgan story? When the shoeshine boy is telling him to buy stock while he's polishing his shoes in the subway, I guarantee you, that shoeshine boy was in
rancid. Gerald talked about his barber giving him stock tips and stuff. You know, he knew something was really wrong then.
Well, we're also talking probably the shoeshine boy in Grand Central Station, right?
we had a lot of good sources, probably.
But I mean, but you contrast that with only 7% of the population even owned stock. Okay, so it couldn't have been, quote, everybody, right? Because 93% didn't have any stock. I'm sure your dad didn't have any, right?
No. Well, and they did have some stock that got, you know, went into receivership, you know, for the next 20 years. So nothing but bad memories associated with it. And Tom, you know, growing up, I began to see the 80s that way when I was living through them, just because I thought this was all kind of a shell game. That, you know, yes, that, you know, now things look pretty good, even though we had 18%, you know, mortgage rates and stuff. But at the time, I thought, this is not living in the real world. This is not the way it's going to be. It can't continue this way, and we should have never gone down this path. But, you know, the opulent consumption, the just the explosion of, you know, patting everybody on the back, you know, being so prosperous and everything going great, you know, and I saw it as a lie even then. In retrospect, I kind of have come to terms with it. I could see that there were good times in the 80s too, and it was a nice time to be in a big city, let's say, compared to now.
Nice time to be a Cub fan.
But, you know, it's kind of the cyclical appetite people have for, you know, forgetting about tomorrow and living for today, you know, this kind of, you know, cheap thrill that always has appealed to people. When enough people buy into it and enough people can keep the ball rolling, you know, everybody kind of like goes into a fog or some kind of, you know, semi-conscious state about it. And I think that's what the 20s look like to me.
Well, the 80s, did you see the 50-year anniversary of Saturday Night Live, where they kind of did the thing for the day?
I caught pieces of it, yeah.
Well, if you, it's probably somewhere, but the part where they did about New York from when they started out, and they started this, you know, in the 70s. It was such a long time ago that, you know, I remember when I first started the trading floor, it was like 1980, 81, and maybe 1982, I went to New York because I had a client out there or something. Somebody wanted maybe to back us or something, so I went out there. I mean, Times Square was, you know, a bunch of porn stores. I mean, it was, New York looked pretty sad. And all of a sudden in the 80s, all that changed. I mean, as soon as you started having the rally, August 82, then all of a sudden, and they were talking about, they showed a bunch of guys in restaurants drinking martinis with the lines of Coke on the table, and everybody had nothing but money during the 80s because the market went up every day, that kind of thing. And they're right. I mean, it's pretty accurate. I went back in the later in the 80s. I'm like, wow, this is the same city. All of a sudden, all, you know, the Broadway was back, and all of a sudden, you know, there were no porn stars. I mean, it wasn't a bunch of hookers running around. Times Square was a no man's land in 81 or 82, wasn't it? 87 or 88. It was terrific. Yeah. Oh, Chicago yeah, absolutely sucked. They had State Street, for those that don't recall. They'd made that a pedestrian mall. Nobody was down there. There was nobody here. I mean, if you were in the South, it's totally opposite now. Talk about a mirror image. The South Loop, where the exchanges were, when the CBOE started to cook, and the Board of Trade, you know, got busier and busier as these new products. They put the bonds in there, and all of a sudden they got all kinds of people there. If you came downtown, the South Loop was where it was happening. And there were, well, the Merck was over on Wacker, but between the CBOE and the Board of Trade, what did we have, Greg? We had we probably had 4,000 traders and another 3,000 or 4,000 people that were, you know, either back office or on the floor personnel. I mean, you could have places here that were open for lunch during the week 4 hours and made money. I mean, where else could you do that? And then all of a sudden now this area looks like a neutron bomb hit it, because there's no really exchange floors anymore, and now the other parts of the loop are doing better in West Loop. But, you know, were the drugs and booze flowing? You bet they were. I mean, everybody who goes the Jordan rules, the Bulls thing, that was the five part thing on the Jordan years, was it five parts, six parts, whatever it was. Whenever they showed the commissioner sitting on the sidelines, he was in the second row. All the people in the front row were the guys I knew from the trading floor. They had the front row seats. The commissioner, they couldn't even boot those guys out for the commissioner, for God's sake. I mean, I was sitting there going, wait a minute, that's Billy Kennedy and about these five other dudes that I know. There's a commissioner sitting behind him. I mean, the trading floor, the people there, I mean, if there were, we went to, Robin and I used to do, we remodeled a couple of condos, maybe four or five, and remember where the Belden Deli was?
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, Chicago got this condo craze, right? And so we went to see, this is before I was on the floor, we were still doing the condo stuff and working at Pullman. And across from the Belden Deli, there's this building that went condo. So Robin and I went up there to see if we could maybe pony up some money and put a bid on one of them. And the real estate lady's showing them to people, and so all of a sudden the phone rings, and she said something about how many square feet were they, and she gives a number, and they go, how much? She goes, all right, everybody, they're all sold by some people that were in the grain pit. They just said, okay, how much per square foot? You want 150 grand for that place? We'll buy all five of them. Okay, that was it. We left. And evidently, every one of them sold close to $200,000 before the closing. That's how crazy stuff
is. Yeah.
They didn't even close them. They didn't remodel them. They didn't do anything. I can't imagine if Robert and I sneaking in there and getting a $150,000 bid and being able to sell it like 3 weeks later for $200,000. But if you had scratch cash trading floor, this stuff was flying. You know, and then all of a sudden, you know, when the interest rates went flying up near the end, they had a little bit of a crash. But this was when they came out of the original crash, when the interest rates were coming down from, it had to be before they went up, because it was in 78, 79. Then they went flying up, and they all crashed, and they went down again. How many crashes did condos have in a five-year span here? Like three?
Yeah.
But, I mean, these guys, they did the right thing. They sold it before... Even before it closed, they gave up their place in line for $50,000. So now you have this. The difference now, I think, though, Jan, is that a lot of people have this 401k and IRAs, because we've got a lot of these clients. But everybody is so convinced that is never going to go the other way. And I really, really hope they're right, because I don't want to lose clients or lose money. But I don't know if you could just bank on that deal forever.
No. No way, Tom.
I mean, it's not about whoever is in power, whether you like them or don't, or her or whatever. There's things that you're bucking up against, and one of them is an amazing amount of debt, which has pushed some of the stuff up there. When you start doing things like, well, Biden did the same thing. He said, well, okay, we're not going to give out weekly money supply anymore. Well, there are people that get weekly money supplies that have the in, we don't. Well, to me, that sucks. Now, government spending has been a part of GDP for forever, right? All of a sudden, we're not going to let you know. We're just going to tell you how good we're doing by cutting it back. Well, why can't you give us the number if you're doing so good? I mean, we're in this kind of bizarre world, Janet, and I don't know why everybody just buys all this stuff. I mean, I was stunned last week on the layoffs of people. I don't know if you were listening the other day about the amount of people who work for the federal government. Did you hear me on that? I could be real brief with
it.
Were you surprised? I was. By seeing the number, the actual numbers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For those that don't remember, I don't think you heard this, Greg, but the administration that actually cut, no, I'm not saying these guys aren't going to, they cut like 270,000 people out of federal workforce. It's actually Clinton and Gore. And you started, and when they wandered into office, 93 it was, right? There were 3,092,000 people working for the federal government. When they left, 2,753,000. And since then, everybody has crept up some. Biden maybe a little more. When they left, 2,753,000. When Bush got out, it was 2,786,000, so that's 30,000 up, not a whole hell of a lot. When Obama left, it was 2,813,000. Which is, what's that, another 50,000? Again, not a hell of a lot.
Immediately, I'm thinking of how to game that number. You semi-privatize something or classify something differently.
I'm just telling you what they are.
Yeah.
And when in the first Trump term, 2,886, well, he picked up 75,000 people. And then Biden picked up like 130. But basically, we're still 70,000 under when Clinton took office.
And there's 50 million more people, aren't there?
Yeah.
So per capita, we're actually doing great.
We're actually doing better. But Clinton and Gore actually did get rid of people, but they did it over a longer period of time, and they went to Congress and did this and that and the other thing, and they actually worked with some of the unions. I'm sure they weren't perfect, but they did it sort of differently. But I'm saying that the number here, if you look at it, are there people in government that don't do anything? You know, probably. But are there people anywhere
that don't... Wait a second. When are you talking about, 2000?
1993.
Oh, 93. There were only 250 million people in the country.
Yeah. So, I mean, in a sense that we're not only what the current administration, I think, is pretty good at, John, and I don't want to get a political discussion, but they're essentially good at telling you what to focus on. Now, to me, should this number be a couple hundred thousand or less? Probably. I'm more worried about the drug companies charging people 100 times what they're making something for in terms of the population. I mean, I don't, if you get rid of 300,000 people here, is that as significant as your next prescription bill? Probably not. Right? I mean, it's in terms of you know, but it's vilifying people and saying, well, not only do we have too many people, but they don't do anything and they're useless. Okay, that's fine. Nobody likes to be called useless. But, you know, some people that's... But I never believed those numbers were like that, to be honest with you. If somebody would have told me that Clinton and Gore got rid of that many people, I wouldn't have believed them. I knew they tried, but I didn't think they were that successful, did you?
No. Well, I mean, that is what we remember them for.
Yeah. No, we remember them from... having sex on the pool
Monica
table.
Lewinsky.
I think the best story was, which makes you wonder, nobody's ever invited me to the White House, but if I was, Greg, would I be nervous shooting pool? Evidently, the White House has two or three or four of, like, the best pool tables made. And the guy wrote the book on the Secret Service. There's a bunch more at Camp David, evidently. That one of the worst days the guy had was Hillary was storming around looking for Bill. Monica was at the gate, and they weren't going to let her in because they couldn't find Bill. And Bill was doing the deed with Eleanor, what's her last name? Mondale on the pool table. And I'm thinking, how does somebody get to do that with his wife and other girlfriend chasing him around the place?
That's like Warren Harding.
Yeah.
Doing
how do you even...
It's an old-established tradition.
I just... Anyway, I also, you know, I was this younger dude was telling me the other day, what do you, Kevin, what we said about, you know, Bristol Myers and this one drug. This guy who shot the CEO is absolutely a cult hero among a lot of people.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how you do that, but. So what do you what is market moving that you've seen heard the last few days? It's certainly unprecedented. You know, I don't know how it's going to play out. It may turn out okay. It may turn out fine, and it might have been just a different style gambit than I would play. I mean, I'm hoping for that. Is any of this stuff? I mean, Russia at the end of the day, other than the oil that they can sell out to people, natural gas, it's got to be in such horrible condition. I mean, Lou talks about the railroads they want to run, everything, but somehow they keep it together. China seems to know. Their real estate's going to the crapo. They seem to owe everybody everything. And yet, somehow or another, they're hanging in there and making weapons and doing nasty stuff. When you sit down and just recollect on this, what do you think's going on? I mean, we're doing all kinds of crazy crap here, and we're broke. I mean, it's, what's going on?
Well, everybody's broke, it seems to me. It's all about, you know, posturing for the next, you know, thing you can get your people on board with, whether it's, you know, a national agenda or a climate, you know, accord or self-flagellation to get rid of fossil fuels. It's all about, you know, getting people to expect, you know, pain and suffering for the things you believe in. And this is kind of like, you know, everything is steered in the direction now of making people expect, you know, this is what we have to do, and it's the right thing to do, it's the patriotic thing to do, but it entails a lot of suffering that you might not, you know, wish you had signed on to. And I mean, the whole discussion about, you know, geopolitics with, you know, NATO and the EU and migration and Ukraine, and you just add up this list of things, and it's like, people are asked to be stoic about this and to not listen to their gut and, you know, to listen to their higher aims. And to me, it's everything is completely topsy-turvy. It's about asking people to forget things that they would otherwise remember or prioritize if they really were thinking straight. And it's to make them feel gut reactions to things and to respond to that. So you're delivered one message, but it implies that you're supposed to be doing the opposite somehow.
What do you
think? The worst thing is that they really aren't leveling with people at how precarious the whole global situation is financially. And I think this is, you know, we can see it in microcosm in our own city here, where we're, you know, payday loans up the wazoo. This is how people generally are getting by now, you know, at the micro level, whether it's, you know, putting everything on a credit card or, you know, shopping in cheaper places. But we're all doing the same thing all over the world, it seems. And it shows that there's been a kind of collapse of, you know, not just positive thinking, but about creative thinking or honest thinking. And I find, you know, this it's been going this way for quite a while now, and it's a global phenomenon. It isn't like one country is ahead of anybody else or likely to change. But, you know, this is, you know, it is belied by what's going on in the stock market and the culture of finance that can percolate along without any of this really having much of an effect. But the real situation is pretty desperate.
What do you make of the, you know, it's, this is, you can send me to the shrink if you need to, but I watch what's going on in Washington and the people that are being seemingly brought up to these jobs, and it's, you know, it's pretty obvious to me that the first thing on the page is loyalty to the number one. Okay, I mean, that's, I mean, you're not you could be Einstein and you're not getting in if you don't kiss the mistletoe. And on the other hand, I'm watching Brendan Johnson, and if you come up and say, is there some, what would be the comparison between Brendan Johnson and Trump? I'll give you the exact comparison. Everybody the guy hires, the first thing on everybody's mind is loyalty to him and his vision. We just had somebody who was put in charge of the Park District. His biggest ally on the council, biggest jobs in the Park District, making sure those jobs go to people that are going to support. It is the exact same mentality.
It's a big raise, too.
Yeah, but it's the exact same mentality. Well, I think the Park District might be a full-time job.
Yep, in Park District.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I think it was it a lady.
I know, no. It says a name. It's a guy, but it.
I know Ramirez Rosa is the new guy, but the lady who retired, I think she was getting paid more than 200 some.
Okay,
but the alderman only gets.
Careful there. Careful. Well, alderman is defined as a part-time job. I think. Is that
Park
District?
What other job did that guy have again?
I'm sure they have something. They're all lawyers. They're all something. Or
no,
somebody's law firm.
Nope.
They have nothing.
Nope. He was a full-time activist.
Just to step back for a minute and take issue with that comparison, I mean, Brandon Johnson's loyalty, first of all, is to the Chicago Teachers Union. It's not the city of Chicago. I mean, he needed Chicago votes to get that job, but he's bought and paid for by the person, the outfit that still employs him. He's on leave from the CTU. So
I get that, but what I'm saying, this the idea of, okay, I need somebody to be dog catcher. Who's going to be the best dog catcher I can find? Well, wait a minute. Who's the most loyal person to you that you can put in that job? This is what I'm seeing now on every level, John, is B. I kind of like A better. Just saying.
Yeah, well, you know, if Trump hadn't been, you know, undercut all over the place in his first term, he probably wouldn't be such.
I'm not interested, honestly, in somebody making excuses as to why he's doing it. I'm just saying he's doing it.
And so I think he's always been that way.
Well, okay, probably. Yeah, he is. But
that's nothing new for them.
Well, so is Vito Corleone.
But Tom, every president demands loyalty from their appointees, and it should expect it, really. And of course, you know, it's not like you want unqualified people in these jobs, but you certainly don't want disloyal people in them. So there is a balance.
If you're doing the right thing and you're going in the right direction, and for the country or the city or somebody, because you're doing the job right, you should gain loyalty from just about everybody, in my opinion. You don't swear to me no matter what I do and or somebody else. I'm just saying, if you listen to the two guys, it sounds somewhat the same. So you have in this I think it's, they know the population apparently better than I do. There's people say, that's fine, you should be able to do that. Well, okay, but to a point. I mean, I would think that, the people that Churchill hired, I hope, were the best people for the job, and not somebody who's going to vote for him instead of Chamberlain. You know, I don't know. I'm just saying, to listen to them talk, it's not like one side is totally different than the other. They want allegiance to their whatever they're doing, and not just. You would think that every no matter who you hire, they may not like you, but they should still do the job. You should be able to hire, if you're the captain of the police force, you should be able to hire somebody who doesn't even like you, but it's going to be a good policeman, right? I would have no problem with that.
Oh yeah, you can have loyalty even with someone who disagrees with you 9 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
But the problem, what we've seen happen is that it's exactly what Madison talked about in Federalist 11 or whatever about factionism. The way politics is has evolved now is that you've got people who were at the head of the line to get appointments or preference or money in an election campaign because of who's behind them and who's viewpoints they represent and personify. And you've got all this stuff that's lurking behind the scenes that's become one of the problems is absolutely no bipartisanship anymore because there's such entrenched interests from the get-go that you can't reason with anybody. You can't move somebody off of their perch without appearing to be some kind of counter-revolutionary or some crook who's just out for some kind of subterfuge and pushing their own agenda and everybody else be damned. And this is how politics is played today. And one of the things that this translates to is the kind of appointments you have the freedom to make. Do you want somebody who is working for the other side? Of course not. Do you want somebody who will listen and talk straight to you? Yes, of course. You should want that. But it isn't like you have much space between these things anymore.
I think that somehow or another, Jen, and I'm I know I beat this up too much. Somehow or another, the amount of money is causing this. The amount of money there is around and the takeover of the country's finances, those people somehow are pushing this partisanship. People argue with people when they really are agreeing with them almost. I mean, I don't think most people disagree about...
They don't want to be perceived as soft or as wavering. Kevin just...
You're blinking out here.
The idea that there's so many people working in the shadow of government now, this is what Kevin says in his text about NGOs, and these people are in effect working for government agencies, and they're funded as if they were a government agency, but they're off the books. So it's the government
they're
not is
off
probably...
The books. They're paying them. They're getting paid.
But it's not showing up in the column of government employees, is what Kevin is saying, and I agree.
We don't know the number of those people. We don't know how many there were 10 years ago. My inclination is that there's more now, but I honestly don't know that.
Yeah, and I think it might be spectacularly more.
But we don't know.
But the idea that government has shrunk or the personnel office is working with reduced numbers is not really the story.
Well, is TSA counted as part of government or is that separate because it's paid for by the airlines?
Well, I think it's got a government charge. It's got national security. It's got
level position. Well, now that you brought it up, I just took it to the next level. Or if something that's co-funded like that, are they considered semi-independent? I don't know. What do you think, Greg? Well,
I would think there's still government. I mean, it's the boot heel of government on everybody's shoulder.
By the way, right. I'm trying to agree with you. I think they're counted too, but I honestly don't know because that's 65,000 people that weren't here during the Clinton era. That means there's 65,000 people less than when Clinton was here. I find it hard to believe.
Yeah, I find it impossible.
Well, I mean, those guys are huge. I mean, what about all the people at the board of the Federal Reserve over here. There's all kinds of security people crawling around over there now. Are they government employees? Or are they, you know, Greg's security firm that aren't coming? I mean, that's a good question. I mean, we, you know, Kevin lodged out the Dodge thing, but now that we're there, who decides who is and who isn't? And are they counted? I don't know. I find it hard to believe there's less people working for the government now than when Clinton was there. But
Of course.
I mean, this comes from the Federal Reserve, and the numbers are monthly. You know, so they you would think they'd be counting the same apples every month instead of oranges. But everybody had, you know, everybody's an opinion. What about all these guys that are outside? Well, I don't know. Are they counted or aren't they? I mean, I guess who would know? I'll bet you a beer that the TSA is not counted.
I would bet it isn't either. And that's by design, of course, too.
Well, I mean,
we're running a leaner, meaner government. We're running anything but that.
Well, I mean, what percentage of the TSA is paid for by the airlines? If it's half paid for by the airlines, what are they? They're sort of some sort of a. They're not really a government employee, are they? Or are they?
Well, I mean, are the airlines independent operations anymore? Or are they under the government's control?
No, they're United Airlines is a stock, and I'm looking right at it.
Of course, but when it comes to this, are they a quasi-governmental agency?
If they're paid by the fees that the airlines paid to the airports, are they a separate payroll system? They could very well be. I mean, how many TSAs are there? I mean, groups like that are half paid for,
you know,
by someone.
I would say that, you know, anybody going through any airport, when they see a TSA person there, they don't think this person's working for the airlines.
I didn't say
that. They think they're working for the government.
What I'm saying is, who are they getting paid by? Is it a separate, because the contributions come from the airlines and the airports, and maybe even do the cities pony up? I don't even know.
Well, that's the way they can claim that they're running a, you know, a leaner operation. But the perception, and I think the reality, is that it's outsourced governmental work, so that the government, you know, it has expanded tremendously into everybody's lives. But they can claim, oh, you know, it's not on your.
If it was up to me, I would go back to you walk on the plane. But that would just be me. I'd get rid of TSA. How far would I get with that? Nowhere. Everybody wants to feel safe.
Yeah, and you know, all it takes is one or two, you know, high-profile episodes where everybody will say, "Please, you know, abuse me more, so I'll feel safer."
Well, I've been, you know,
don't people stripping in line instead of just taking off their belts and shoes?
Well, I would be. When it all first happened, 9/11 happened, and all this stuff started, people started, you know, this security and this building needs to be. My view, John, is that if you can't protect everybody, you can't protect anybody. And all of a sudden, now we're picking people.
We've never gone back. You know, it's none of the buildings downtown have the kind of open, you know, access that they used to have. Government buildings don't have the same open access. We'll never get that back.
You couldn't give me an office in the Board of Trade building. Couldn't give it to me. I mean, to walk in, escalator to the second floor. Who are you? Let's see an ID. I don't want everybody who comes up to the PTI to have to go through that. And I don't want to have to go through it every day either. All the elevators don't stop on the first floor. Well, what's the point?
It's like the Harold Washington Library. That to me was the precursor of all of this. You take two long escalator rides to get to the elevator floor.
I mean, how do you have security in a building that has thousands of people in it? I mean, how many people are you really stopping? And if somebody wants to kill somebody, they just wait to let them out. What's the difference?
Yeah, it's just about delaying the point of contact. You know, if there's 10 floors in a building and two of them are pretty much, you know, open to the public where you can't get to anything very important, then those are two floors you don't have to police as carefully as the other eight. But rather than policing 10 floors, you police 8. Well, is this a smart move? I don't see how it is.
Well, my cousin used to work for, who are the guys that have the home securities at ADP?
Yeah.
I used to get, when I was on the floor, he used to give me the ADP stickers, and I'd pass them around to my buddies in the pit. Everybody just wanted them on their front door. They didn't want to buy, so hopefully the guy would go next door if he wanted to rob the place. Okay, then. The next door neighbor would probably be pissed at if he knew you were doing that. What do you say? We're going to break it. So somebody comes to Chicago to kill somebody, and they see the Federal Reserve building look like an armed fort, and they kill me across the street. Am I happy or sad? that we put the security on those guys.
Yeah.
S&P futures up 22, NASDAQ futures up 140. Be right back. I think we have Nancy 2 weeks in a row because she was off 2 weeks, but we'll see who we get. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Has your online trading career hit a double bottom with no one to talk strategies with? Are commissions eating up all your profits? You need help. You need PTIProDirect.com. Trade stocks for 1 cent a share, stock options for $1 a contract, all with a $1 minimum per trade for stock and options. That's right, $1, Chuck. And best of all, you get to talk to former option floor traders to fine-tune your trading game plan. So check it out at PTIProDirect.com. That's PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
What are you looking at, butthead?
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Blowing off back Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 23. NASDAQ futures up 147. Been there pretty much the whole time we came in this morning. We had we got Tesla up $9. It was down in the 280s. Back up over 300. The Dow up 117. Dow futures over in Europe. These guys were up huge. DAX up 602. That's huge. 2.7%. Their defense stocks are absolutely to the moon. BAE Systems is up 13%. And it has been up. They've been flying up. FTSE up 71.8%, CAC up 114.4%. We're in Asia. Nikkei up 629, 1.7%, 37,785. Hang Seng up 64, muted there, but still up a little bit. 0.3%, Shanghai down 3, call that flat. Friday is a way of review. Dow was up 601, S&P up 92, NASDAQ up 302. So that was a big move after the Oval Office thing. We were down, then we came flying back up, but still we closed the month down 4% over in the NASDAQ, so we're going to try and get that back here, obviously, this month. Bonds up 1 basis point, 4.23. Get a load of this, though. The Bund up 12 basis points, 2.51. Japan up 4 basis points, 1.42. So those guys, that's highs for them for a while. Oil's not going anywhere. Up 22 cents, 69.89. Still hovering at low 70s or below 70. Brent up 28 cents, 73.09. Natural gas up 5 cents, 3.89. Gold, which was rallying earlier, it's still up $34, 28.82, way below the 29.50, but it's trying to make a way back. Now, here's a move in silver, up 77 cents, that's 2.4%, 32.26. Foreign exchange, the euro is 104.72, which is kind of where it's been. Same way with the pound, 126.8, so they haven't that much of a movement there. Crypto, I've got it up 936, down 936 at 93,185, but it was It's been up 14,000 in the last 3 days. Today it's just taking a pause. It traded yesterday. It was up a bunch last night. It was up 7,200 bucks or something. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Yeah, good morning. It's currently 7:36 on March 3rd, 2025. As far as weather in Chicago, currently 35 degrees at Midway and 34 at O'Hare. High of around 50 today with a slight chance of rain and sleet. Tonight, mostly cloudy and likely chance of showers, about 60%, low of 40. Down in Phoenix, Arizona, 52 degrees right now. Expected to be sunny, windier, and cooler with a high of 66 degrees today and partly sunny skies. Now over to college basketball. Men's, number 11 Wisconsin lost to number 8 Michigan State, 71-62 for the fifth straight victory. Illinois beat Michigan, 93-73. Trey White had 19 points and 11 rebounds, which led Illinois to take down number 15 Michigan. Memphis won against UAB, close game of 88-81. In women's, number 3 Notre Dame won against number 25 Louisville, 72-59. Anne Hidalgo scored 20 points, which allowed Notre Dame to come back from their consecutive losses. Marquette lost to UConn, 92-57. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
We have Nancy or Audrey?
We had Audrey.
Audrey, hey, how are you, Aud? What's up?
Good morning. Just fine. How are you, gentlemen, this morning?
Gentlemen?
Good, buddy. Good to hear you.
Gentlemen, who are you talking to?
Well...
Yes.
I'm giving you all the benefit of the doubt. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. We are gentlemen, aren't we, John? We could put a hat and a suit on, with, you know, once in a while.
John always is.
Yes,
he is. We can fool anybody on.
That, isn't that the truth? The God, I was Aud and I were. I was telling Aud we went to the Ollie's store yesterday, and if you look around, the doesn't look like a lot of society's doing too hot, does it?
No, it's. First of all, I'm very disappointed because me and a lot of my friends did like the Big Lots, and I know a lot of people out in this area liked it. And this new store that replaced it didn't. But yeah, it is. You're right. There was a lot of people that were barely making it, shopping for bargains. You could just tell. And yeah, life is hard for a lot of people.
What the?
I think it's hard for unless you're really, really lucky. Between the recession starting back in 08 and some of the market gyrations and the world in general plus inflation, I think it's you're rutted to stay in the same place.
Yeah, I think you are, and I think a lot of it is in the medical stuff, and a lot of it is in automobiles, I think, and some taxes, but if the tax increases in Illinois kind of
you
a
can
beta,
just say everything. Everything.
You can just say everything. Yeah, I mean, you do sort of wonder. Everything just keeps creeping up, tolls. I mean, you name it, and I don't think anybody's keeping pace with that. But in terms of the real estate, though, it's still a lot of cash buyers to cash buyers, right? People selling houses at one price and use the money to buy another one. And
it's a very big year for cash buyers. Some of our data came out from last year. It was a very big year for cash buyers. But what they're forecasting, it's actually... You could tell it's the spring season because it's gotten very busy, and the forecast is for prices to stay the same or edge higher, and we are still short, way short inventory. So I've already seen some multiple offers happening. So again, if you've got a nice house, you're going to get a ton of offers, but it's got to look like it's got to be ready to go, and you'll get your buyers. But anything, again, to beat a dead horse.
Or you might have to get a little closer to the mic. You're breaking up a little bit.
Am I really?
Yeah. I wouldn't.
All right. How's that? Is that any better?
Yes, a little bit.
All right. Got my nose in the screen practically.
All right.
It's just, it's going to be another, there goes your dog. I'll grab her in a second. It's going to be a tough market again. I'll be right back.
God. The little Maltese, the latest on her, Jan, is she was out the other morning and there's a coyote out behind the fence and she wanted to take on the coyote.
Of course. They're fearless.
They're nuts. The lady downstairs, one of the bartenders, she's a vet tech. I was saying, you know, daffy little dog Audrey's, and Audrey keeps calling her my dog, wanted to take on the coyote. She goes, well, we've been doing a lot of coyote bites lately. Virtually every instance, it's a dumb dog that's going after a coyote, not the other way around.
Okay, anyway. I'm back.
Was she trying to go out and find the coyote?
She was sitting on the back of the couch barking at some poor man who was trying to walk, get his exercise in the morning.
Look at the nerve of that dude. I can understand it. Well, so Nancy was talking last week about how many people now are actually starting to refinance because the credit card bills are getting so much higher. They're better off doing that at the 7% and getting rid of the 3 just because the other stuff's 25%.
Oh, my God, 25, 28. There, I saw one at 29. I think of all the things that need to be done is you have to corral these banks. There's absolutely no need to be paying out 1.5% and you take it at almost 30. That would be illegal in any other business.
I don't think the mob charged that much, did they?
I think the mob's sheep are in the corner.
Now, what do you make of that, John? I don't see any of the last 5 or 6 administrations going after anybody big. I don't see them going after the drug companies. I don't see them going against the banks. And I don't see them against. And I don't see anybody. Well, a couple of states seem like they're trying to do something with the education by making. Somebody in Illinois, Pritzker, came out and said something about allowing community colleges to give 4-year degrees. Did you guys give a 4-year degree, or were you 2?
No, we're 2. But this has other problems associated with it, Tom, that, like Governor State University was founded as a 3rd and 4th year institution to accept students from community colleges, such as where I taught, who would complete their first 2 years and then transfer to get a bachelor's degree. Well, 15 years ago or so, Governor State went to a 4-year curriculum, which in effect, it's more expensive than the community colleges, but less of a difference than there used to be. So they're competing with the community colleges now for the same students to get them at entry level in their programs. And, you've had community colleges like Sangamon State that converted to 4-year institutions. It's now U of I Springfield, but depending on where it's located, that has competition issues for the community college system that's taxpayer supported in its district. So you throw that out of whack by doing this. I don't see it as going down well with other institutions. Anyway, I want to get back to Audrey.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the problem is that you're simply, you could be a 2-year or 4-year, but you're still not turning out educated people. Because they're not educated when they're getting into college, because it's all the way back to grammar school. The amount of information that I think should be commonplace to the average person that we've all learned, I'm not saying I'm a rocket scientist, but I find the gaps in education among everybody, let's say under 30, is appalling. So, I mean, I don't even know how, I don't care what you do with what college, they're not bringing enough to the table, unless you're very lucky, you're either private school educated, your parents are homeschooling you, because the public schools, and all we have to do is look at Chicago for a disgusting, appalling, I have no words for how bad the school systems are that are letting uneducated people around and the teachers expect to get paid for it. I think if you have a merit system and if you don't have a C+ or B average in your classroom, you should be fired.
Well, I mean, you're still wandering in and out, but...
Sorry.
But, Jan,
I don't know what to do.
Are you going through a mic or what are you doing?
Yeah, same thing I always do. Right. It's that time of day when AT&T starts slowing my internet system down. That might be it.
John, how much of it, if you had a when the school stuff the way it is, and this is one of the big issues with the cities. People see the money pouring into the area, and it looks like that 8th grade or after high school, people don't have the same skill set that they seem to remember that they had. That's a fair way of looking at it. And now, if that's the truth, why do you think? How much of it is education? How much of it is family? And how much of it is area? I mean,
I think it's everything. Because if your mom and dad don't tell you do your homework and check it, there's no backup for what the teachers are trying to do. But I'm sorry. I cannot believe how people can barely read, write, and add 2 and 2 and get 4 consistently.
I like that consistently. Yeah. I mean, not just once in a while. You should get 4 all the time.
It's true.
Oh, I know. But I guess I'm trying to find where the issues are.
If
there.
You have uneducated parents, they used to, when you know, like when my grandparents came to this country. Okay, they could barely speak English. The kids, my parents, aunts and uncles went to school, and they better learn because that's why the grandparents sacrificed to come to America to provide a better education. So you better learn, even if they couldn't really help you. And then, you know, my mom and dad made sure that my homework was done before you could go out and play, and I better damn well get good grades. So you have to have backup, but if the teachers aren't educated enough or held to a standard to teach the kids, well, it's just not going to go anywhere. And the fact that these teachers could have the nerve to ask for more money and more contracts when they can't provide, what, even a third of competency at basic skills?
Well, we're also asking, in some places, we're asking the schools to provide way more than just teaching. We're providing, you know, all kinds of meals, all kinds of stuff that people aren't getting. The whole area.
But the teachers aren't cooking in for lunch for them, so that's not an issue.
What is the, in terms of the, on what happens, I'm not saying this is going to happen, you know, the banks have to do what do they call it, Jen? The bad day study. What happens to, I know what happens to retired people if the market drops 40%. They got problems. Hopefully, a lot of them, you know, people have got enough in cash to where they'll still be okay. What happens, Aud, to your market if prices drop some? Is that a plus or a minus? Or it doesn't really, I mean, obviously it's going to help the people that are looking, assuming they still have a job. But what the cash buyers, I guess it doesn't really matter, does it? They're just trading one for the other. I mean, what if the prices go from a median of 406 to 470, what happens? I mean, obviously the people who paid 406 just lost their down payment. But how serious would that be? Do you have any idea?
Well, if it's going to run up that much that quickly, it's going to hurt no matter what, because even if, to your point, the person who has two homes is selling something for more money to buy something for more money is one thing, but the problem is finding after a while you're going to hit a range of prices that buyers A, can't afford, and B, are the house. What always contains the market though is when things just start not appraising out. So if homes in the neighborhood are selling for $400 and the same home is, somebody tries to sell it for 5.25, well, you know, A, common sense will prevail in some cases, and they're either not going to show it, nobody's going to buy it, it's going to sit there until the prices come in line. So supply and demand, you know, do work here also. You know, people are, you know, today's buyers and sellers are very well educated from the internet. So they have a good idea before you get them of what they want to spend and what is the appropriate range of prices for the neighborhood they're looking in. Very few people come to you that have never researched or looked at a house that they in the area they wanted.
Plus, a lot of them are already approved for their mortgage and stuff too, right?
Well, it doesn't matter if you're approved for the mortgage or the appraisal doesn't work out.
Okay.
So if you know if the bank says, "Wow, we're not that stupid. We're not giving you another 150 more than the highest priced house has ever sold for in there," you know, that's also a check and balance on the process.
Well, how long does it take? Maybe Jack can opine on this. Obviously, we've gone from, you know, 300 to 400 in the last few years. What all it takes is, what, one or two people to pay 550, and then they're all worth 550? Well, yeah, I mean, so you're saying houses, they're trading at 400, all of a sudden somebody wants to pay
$5.25. Well, it's not going to make that giant jump. In an apples to apples situation, within 30 days, you know, it's not going to make that jump.
But a big concern for me is all it takes is a couple short sales or foreclosures to bring the comps down for that area, because you've got, you know, a distressed seller who's trying to get out from under a mortgage that they no longer can afford. All right, do you see many short sales these days?
You know what? I've not seen. I've seen a couple of them here and there. So that's what tells me that, you know, to Tom's point too, there's trouble in the world because you've seen a few more than you've seen in the last couple of years. So there are people struggling and losing their houses. It's not a huge number yet, but it's percolating there.
Well, you said the rental market's strong. If somebody's having trouble right now, say somebody gets transferred, he has to go somewhere else to get a job, gets laid off. Can most people? That's a big guess, I'm sure. But if you don't want to puke the place out, use a floor term. Can you rent it? And if you're transferred to Topeka, Kansas, can you go there and just rent there and at least cover your stuff here? Generally, you said the rents are pretty high.
Proportionally, I can't speak to Kansas, but I'm saying, proportionally, I mean, here,
if I can't sell my house and I don't even know how long I'm going to be in Kansas, who knows? I might not like it down there. Right now, I could probably cover myself by renting it, can't I?
You could probably more than cover yourself. Rentals that are at a premium, and it is, you know, if you do a lot of the numbers, even at around 7%, it's still more expensive to rent than it is to buy right now. It still is. I mean, I have, you know, condos that I'm renting. Well, I have one nice townhouse that I rent for a client, and he's making $1,500 a month on his mortgage payment.
Well,
over the top.
What are you seeing in your area, Jen?
Yeah, nice number.
Yeah, rentals are just out of sight around me. I mean,
I agree with you, John. I tell people that, you know, if you've got that really good credit score, go look at a first-time buyer. Go look at a condo or a townhome where you're putting 3 or 5% down conventional. It's almost the same amount of money as your security deposit, your first month's rent.
How did we get back to the 2008 when all of a sudden people weren't putting 20% down or 15 or 10 and there's no way on earth you should let people in for 3 and 5. We're right back to that, aren't we?
No, it's never been like, no, it's never been. Very few people, not very few, but a minority. The prices don't allow most people to put down, especially first-time buyers, even people who've been there. I mean, you know, it's one thing if you're buying something for 300, 10% is 30. You know, that's a lot. And then this way, people can afford the payment, but they can't afford the down payment. By the time they save for the down payment, in the last 5 years, the house is now out of their reach.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're better off getting in, putting your minimum down, and when you get enough to pay off your PMI, then you could ask the company to drop it, and then you're at least doing better.
Why do you suppose, other than the finance part of it, why do you suppose the rentals are in great demand? Is it because some people got burned so much on buying stuff or not?
Well, I think that, you know, I don't know, John. I think it's population. I don't think that people have gotten burned so much. As now you actually have really, remember, you've got a whole new generation coming out that's looking for places to live. They're coming, millennials, the Gen Zs, they're out in the world and they're buying and selling things. And the kids that rented downtown when they first got out of school, and now they want to form a household, they're looking to buy something.
I think.
Go ahead, John.
I hate to generalize. Young people today are kind of, you know, they're looking for ways to get by with less than, you know, you could hope or expect to have in earlier times. So, you know, they do without a car. They bike around, or they Uber around, and they don't want a car payment, they don't want a car insurance bill, and if they can, you know, travel light and be ready to spring on a job opportunity here or elsewhere or some other state, they don't want to be saddled with trying to unload a house that they've had to pay upkeep on and insure and, you know, depreciate. So they're perfectly happy to pay a premium in a higher rent to avoid those kind of what they see as burdens. It isn't about, you know, home ownership being some kind of a exalted state for them. It's like dragging a piece of real estate around with you for the rest of your life. I think they see things very differently from how their parents and grandparents did.
Well, didn't we have...
They see things differently until all of a sudden they fall in love, meet, and want to have a kid, and then
and
all of a sudden
they gotta think about school. Yes.
Comes out of the back of their heads.
And fewer of them are doing that, but you know, the marriage rates, the reproductive rates, everything. It's like people are not as enchanted by that, you know, idea anymore of getting married and settling down. It's harder for people to even imagine doing that, it seems.
Their view of the future, both being able to afford kids and what the kids are going to walk their way into, maybe is not it. Didn't a lot of people? This is a gross.
Well, the United States birth rate is down.
Yeah.
We do need to. But I think I still see a lot of young couples. Matter of fact, I have two right now that are looking for their first home. And they're moving out of the city apartment, want to be in the suburbs, want to get a dog. So, you know, and a lot of times it depends on what you were raised with. Because a lot of times you just go back to, if you had a happy childhood, even subconsciously or consciously, you kind of want to repeat the same thing.
Well, then, I mean, this is kind of a generalization, but before 2007, you know, the pops, the daughters moving downtown are saying, wait a minute, I don't want you living in Logan Square, you know, trundling four blocks when you get home from the L. We'll get you in a high rise, and by the way, the condos are going up, I'll just buy the condo. And then when 2007 happens, everybody got pretty much annihilated on those condos, right? So now I think that it's people aren't just saying, well, I'll just buy a condo downstairs, I'll never lose money. I don't downtown, not downstairs, but I think some of that, it's become stickier. People aren't as conscious that they're always going to lose money. Is that a piece of it, at least? I mean, Chicago is not exactly a place you would want to invest downtown right now. At least I wouldn't.
No. Or have your young daughter living by herself.
I wouldn't spend a dime in Chicago right now, but that's me.
Well, you'd still rather have your daughter at a place with an indoor parking and a guard downstairs.
You want safety. And to your point, kids are still going to school, universities, the colleges in the city, and you want your child to be safe. And it's been a big concern around some college campuses now. So I don't know. I think it's a tough call, to your point, because you're worrying about your child walking home in the dark after school or going out with their friends. Whether it's, you know, you're a boy or girl, you still have to be concerned nowadays. So I don't know. I think it's a tough situation right now.
Well, I just would like to see when Fridays are, you know, one of our biggest Stocks and Jocks of the month, when we have the labor numbers come out. And I wonder, I'll ask you, what is it when you don't see as much of people's numbers as Nancy does. I mean, you see them, but she thinks through them like she has to. What do you make of what Carl's been talking about? Not talking about, he's been noticing the last 6-7 months is that even though hourly wages are going up, the paychecks are going down. People are getting less and less hours, and now it seems like every family has to have both people working. Maybe somebody would even a side job. Are you seeing a lot of that, or people you don't talk about that much when you're just taking people around on places?
Well, I do have to know because I have to know what they can afford, but I can only think of out of 50, maybe one where there's only one wage earner. Everybody's working everybody works in the family. Especially if you want to buy a house, very few people are in a position where one person's making, you know, $250,000 a year.
Well, if you buy a place for $425,000, if you have the down payment, what do you need to make to cover everything? Insurance, taxes, the whole bit. You got to be pushing 180, 190.
So I mean, you have to have two people making 70, 80, 90, 100 to be able to buy some, you know, a nice house.
Whoa, that's a lot, John.
Yeah, I wouldn't be buying a house at that age today.
Well, yeah, because you know, a broad stroke is 2.5 times what you make, and then obviously the ratios can be skewed down more. A lot of places, Nancy will kind of talk to that it could be better, but then you take away a car payment. People have two car payments. They have school loan payments, and there goes what you could afford. It gets squeezed tighter and tighter. That's why we tell people that are looking and they sign a contract that are Don't buy anything. I always tell, don't charge your furniture. Don't go out and buy a new F-150 pickup truck. Don't charge a stick of gum until after you close, because you're so tight on your debt to income ratio. And you just have to be, it is a trade-off. There obviously are people who have a lot of money, who've done well in the market, who have fabulous jobs. But the majority of the people are just trying to save enough. That's why they need that 3 to 5% to get a foothold. Otherwise, they'll never be able to, if you didn't have that to get in there.
What percentage, we got a dash, but off the top of your heads and your intelligent heads, but what percentage of people right now that bought a house in the last 15 years, if they had to buy it again today at 7%, could afford their own house with the prices going up and the mortgage going up?
Oh,
almost none.
I will bet, maybe 20 to 30 or 40%, maybe, if their income grew proportionately. But no, because basically you'll double your payment. Though I have to tell you, I have seen rates this week between 6.5% and 6.875%.
Well, 6.5%, even though the numbers aren't that more, sure seems a hell of a lot better than me than 7.25% or 7.5%, even though it's...
Yeah, so people do need to shop around. There are decent rates. Call Nancy, see what's out there. But there's a little bit of break here and there. But they basically trade the market. If you watch the mortgage rates fluctuate, they're fluctuating like watching the option screens change.
Yeah, it's scary,
isn't it? When Nancy goes to lock in for somebody, it locks, looks at the best rate, they're there and then they're not there. So, it's another interesting facet of the market.
All right, thank you. Good stuff. John, thank you very much. S&P futures up 24, NASDAQ futures up 156. Hopefully we'll stay up. We could use a rally. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
That's all, folks.